everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, we're off and running on Thursday, August the 3rd, 2025. Glad to see the couple of days of windy, kind of dusty conditions.
Dying down.
The wind's lying down a little bit, making the air very fresh, as they say. Anyway, looks like a pretty nice weekend coming up.
Yeah, and we should get a few sprinkles Friday afternoon and Friday evening.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute here. And then we've got high 90s coming up into the week. And by the way, the earliest 100-degree temperature in Tucson is still a couple of weeks away. Well, the record anyway, I think it's mid-April. So if we were to hit it earlier, it would be the earliest. But we really do need the rain. We're in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio, part of the Bustos Media Center. We're very proud of the fact that we have five radio stations now operating under one roof here in central Tucson. This one is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. Our radio show is in its 15th year. We have our worldwide live listening. All of my podcasts are available for you. Very simple to use. Keep it simple formula at the Buckmaster Show. The website is buckmastershow.com. When we do our telephone interviews, the Buckmaster Show live line is presented by my friend Sean and his team, Sean McCluskey at Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. We get the ball rolling usually the first Thursday of the month. We try to bring in Pima County Supervisor, District 4 Supervisor, the lone Republican on the five-member Board of Supervisors, Steve Christie, who in November won a third four-year term. And, of course, Mr. Christie sold his dealership, Steve Christie Chrysler Jeep dealership, in 2007. But still, people, every day, I reckon come up to you and say, "Oh gosh, I bought a car from you. How you doing, Steve?"
I'm doing great, and yes, that's pretty accurate. I do get a lot of comments like that, and all I can do is thank the advertising agency and all the thousands of dollars we spent, if they can remember that after almost 20 years that still had the dealership.
Tom had mentioned there might be a little bit of rain in the forecast. I guess we've got, what, about a 30% chance. And the reason I bring that up to you, your district is includes Mount Lemmon, and they definitely, like all of us, need some rain and hopefully even some snow.
Yeah, that the forecast, as Tom was alluding to, looks like we might get some precipitation and even some snowfall up there in Mount Lemmon, which is always needed and greatly appreciated. So let's keep our fingers crossed that it does its job and helps to tamp down the potential for wildfires.
Do they have enough water right now up there?
They have
at the village.
Their water, their containers up there, their storage units are doing very, very well. They're very conscious of water use. The businesses up there have been very proactive in making sure that there's not excessive water use, and have done all their efforts to do so. So at this particular point, the water, it does not seem to be an issue, or available water is an issue. And with the added precipitation chances, it even looks brighter.
You had sort of joined forces with your colleague, Supervisor Dr. Matt Hines, and I believe it's very important. We do need to know, are we protected with the fire services here, as we're facing certainly the driest or maybe the second driest period on record here in Pima County?
Yeah, it's been a good effort from Supervisor Hines' office and my office. He went in one area, and I centered on another. My area, of course, in my office's initiative, was a wildfire mitigation plan, an emergency plan countywide, at how to prevent and deal with and to adapt to wildfire issues and potential problems. Supervisor Hines, his concern that, and he and I both supported each other's initiatives. His concern dealt with fire districts not having adequate funding to provide staffing, training, equipment,
sure,
manpower in many rural and remote areas. And that is usually where the wildfires start. So I commend Supervisor Hines for his effort on that, and I'm supporting him on his initiative. And he's been very supportive of the wildfire mitigation wide wildfire mitigation countywide plan that my office has initiated. Matter of fact, as we're on this subject, I just want to congratulate the Green Valley community and in general, and the Green Valley Council in particular, because last Thursday they had a forum given and sponsored by the Green Valley Council on wildfire awareness and prevention. And it was very well received. They had close to 200 people that filled the Desert Hills Recreation Center. And they had guests and presenters and representatives from the Santa Rita Fire District, the Pima County Regional Flood Control District, the Greater Green Valley Community Emergency Response Team, and the Arizona Department of Forestry and Fire Management. And each presenter gave a detailed analysis of what we need to do, not only in the Green Valley community, but in Pima County as well. This all is applicable to prepare and to prevent what is preparable and preventable in terms of mitigating wildfires. And it was very well received. There's a great deal of interest in the Green Valley community and throughout Pima County to be able to participate proactively in some manner to set up safeguards so the potential and the exposure to wildfires is not as great and can be mitigated. So hats off to the Green Valley community for their efforts, and we're going to use that as kind of a stepping stone throughout Pima County as a regional plan of meetings, of town halls, of symposiums to educate the populace on what they can do and how they can act and prevent and plan for wildfire problems.
Every homeowner can clear areas around their home that could be susceptible to wildfires.
Absolutely, they have the FireWise certification program. It's been hugely embraced by numerous HOAs and neighborhoods, not only in Green Valley, but particularly the benchmark, the gold standard, was Summerhaven. They have a very active FireWise program, and they've been given awards for their efforts. And now it's trickling down throughout Pima County, and particularly in District 4, my district, to make sure that everybody is aware of the FireWise issues and potential that the FireWise program holds to prevent fire wildfires that you can do as a homeowner. And every day it seems like another HOA is committed to being certified by the FireWise program.
Any news on that tragic situation that happened out in the Reddington area, a remote area of Pima County where a gentleman, it's being called the Good Samaritan murder. Somebody came up to the door on Christmas Eve. Could you give me a jump start to my truck? And the Good Samaritan said, yeah, I'll come out and help. Well, he never came home.
He never came home.
He was murdered.
And they found him a couple of miles from his residence.
Murdered,
left next to a burning truck.
And,
the issue, of course, is the emergency response to something like that when there is a person missing and then ultimately ending up in such a tragic and horrific manner. So this became kind of a unifying issue in the Reddington community. You know, as I've stated many times, that's such a remote area that within a mile of where this residence of the Good Samaritan took place, you can literally cross three county lines.
Wow.
And it is very rural and agrarian, and it's out there. And consequently, you have roads that aren't up to capacity or up to quality to allow for emergency responses. And this is an issue as well, as there is communication and basically patrol availability of the sheriff's department. And it's very frustrating when there's two counties that have sheriffs in that adjacent area. And maybe there could be some working out of that. But in any event, one of the great things that came out of this is a community cohesiveness to get together and discuss this.
Yeah, how do we move forward and try to keep our area safe?
And
yeah.
A community leader out in the Reddington Road area, her name is Judy Dykes, and she's just a terrific community leader and a longtime resident of the Reddington Valley. They had 74 to 75 people in attendance, along with the sheriffs from Pima and Pinal counties, as well as various fire and medical officials that held a town hall out there and great back and forth discussion.
That's pretty well represented for such a small area, isn't it?
That
many people.
As well as the topics of discussion, and it gave so much of the community a feeling that, yes, we're not forgotten out here. We need the services that we pay our taxes to receive. And it was very well received. And I don't think, as long as I can remember, at least as long as I've been supervisor, which is going on 9 years now, that there has ever been such a community gathering in such a number with so many county representatives. They even had a representative from the Department of Transportation. So all the grievances, all the concerns, all the airing of issues was allowed and presented at this meeting. And it's kind of like a boiling tea kettle. It boils and boils, and then you open up the top a little bit and let the steam out, and people feel better, and they know they're being heard, and there were some substantive ideas that came out of it.
That's very positive. It's kind of like a giant neighborhood watch group, because normally when you think of a neighborhood group, you think of one block, but with Reddington, it's spread out all over the place.
It is, and it's a good way of putting that.
Yeah.
But they've always been very supportive as a community.
Yeah.
But they just don't feel they've gotten the support of the services that they need to make their area safe and sound, and this was a real step in that direction.
Yeah, what do they say, the squeaky wheel?
Yeah, something of that nature.
Gets a little bit of attention.
But it was well received, and I'm very grateful to Sheriff Nanos and other Pima County officials for taking the time to go way out there and meet with them, because it meant a lot.
All right, Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie is with us. Steve, Pima County Supervisor, representing the very spread out District Number 4 on the Board of Supervisors. Steve, we have a new sponsor here on the program. We are delighted to welcome this week Pima Council on Aging, connecting individuals to programs and services, secure services that accurate information and advocacy support comes from. Pima Council on Aging, PCOA's mission is to promote dignity, respect for aging, and independence in the lives of Pima County's older adults and their families. PCOA offers vital programs and services, accurate information, and advocacy that could impact aging adults. Find out more, I hope you do, by visiting PCOA.org. And again, we thank Pima Council on Aging for joining the roster of Buckmaster Show partners. We'll take a break. Be right back.
The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. A lot of replenishment going on of things in the garden after January. I know up at the Buckmaster Bungalow, we lost a lot of plants. We had that cold spell that lasted really prolonged a couple of weeks. There was no rain that came along, but it was really cold, and some of the plants didn't make it. So Green Things would be a perfect place to go to replenish the plants that didn't make it and put some color in your garden. 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. It's a 13-acre site, chocked full of everything you need for the garden. Don't forget Zocalo Village. All the wonderful items, imported items from Mexico and really all over, Latin America, even Europe. And they have that sale up to 50% off. The sale continues at Zocalo Village, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Pima County District 4 Republican Supervisor Steve Christie is with us in studio for his monthly visit. We were talking about Reddington and Pima County folks. You know, if you just stay around the Tucson area, you think, oh, there's not a lot of rural communities here, but there are.
There's a lot of
rural communities. Rural land.
My office made the initiative to request the county administrator and administration to come up with an official community safety plan, not only for Reddington, but all rural communities. And they've been very receptive to the idea because it is an issue not only in Reddington area, but up in Aravaca and the Ajo area.
Sure.
And there's a great deal of remote rural agriculture areas that are underserved as far as emergency response. So our office asked for a countywide community safety plan, and we're looking for the draft of that to be available in June. And this meeting that took place out in Reddington will offer a great deal of input to the county's putting this plan together. So it's not just for Reddington, it's for the entire Pima County emergency plan.
Geographically, it's a very large district, and you have some schooling, some of the educational areas, kind of small schools, right?
Well, they're growing, and they have been growing, and there's quite a number of them, and that's the Vail School District that we're all very proud of. They've been given some awards lately, and I like to brag about them because they are so engaged not only with their community activities and the educational foundations that they do, but the families, the parents, and it's part of a big community out there, and they're just a terrific, wonderful organization of schools, the Vail School District. And Empire High School, one of the premier high schools out there, just received a number one ranking in the entire state of Arizona, which includes public, charter, and private schools.
You're kidding. So they're like the number one rated high school academically?
Academically, wow. The Empire High School out in Vail. So they're number one in Arizona, and their Corona Foothills Middle School is the number one middle school in the state, not just this year, but 3 years in a row. So
I did not know. I knew that Vail School District had a really good reputation. It sounds like some of those schools really are excelling, right?
They're really excelling, and the whole district is as well. So great congratulations to the Vail School District and the parents and the students and all the efforts they do out there. And it's showing in their awards and their recognition, and we're very proud of them.
All right, District 5, Pima County Supervisor, Adelita District. Yeah, District 5, Supervisor Adelita Grijalva, right next to District 4, Steve Christie. And Adelita resigned, of course. She is now running to fill the congressional seat vacated by her dad, who passed away here recently, Raul Grijalva. So the supervisors, the four or more remaining supervisors, Steve Christie, this is pretty much a fast-track process, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is, and I expressed a bit of concern over it that it may not give people that might be interested in applying for the position enough adequate time to prepare for meetings with the supervisors, one-on-ones, or gathering input and support from their constituencies. It's, I think, from like April 7th, Friday, to the next Monday or Tuesday is the deadline, and Supervisor Grijalva made it very clear that she felt compelled to offer that as the timeline because we're coming into the budget season, and that she did not want her district not to be represented about that time. And I just hope it gives enough people enough time to think and reflect on the potential of filing for that position. So we'll see. And it was a very touching moment when she resigned. She, as is understandable, she was emotional. And she and I, of course, I don't recall too many issues that we saw eye to eye on, but we always had a very good, friendly relationship outside of the boardroom. And she was always most gracious with all of her efforts with me as the chair. And I told her, I said, I wish you well, Adelita, but I'm going to miss arguing with you, particularly when I always win the arguments.
There you go. Yeah.
So I wish her well, and I wish her luck in her next phase of her career.
So the board may be putting a new supervisor here joining you in within like a week or so.
Well, not that soon.
It's within 2 weeks.
It's the next meeting, which will be by April 15th.
Wow.
That meeting, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
They're slated to make that selection.
And you said the budget, that's coming up very quickly.
Yeah, May is usually the signal flag goes up that we got to start looking at a bunch of numbers and bunch of programs.
And the department heads come up and say, we need more money.
That's basically what everybody says.
And how does that financial picture look generally?
Well, I think there are some real significant issues of concern that I've been talking about for many years now regarding relying on government grants. The old saying that we know so well in our generation from President Kennedy, you know, ask not what the country can do for you. And that's what we keep asking the federal government to do for our county, is to provide grants, provide funding. Well, you can't rely on the federal government all the time, and you shouldn't rely on the federal government, especially when you put people in an employment situation that they rely on those grants to be paid their salary with, and then all of a sudden they're yanked out from underneath them. I'm in kind of a double-edged sword situation because, first of all, I don't feel that it's a wise or expeditious manner to rely so heavily on grants, particularly as we've seen with the asylum-seeking issues, $120, $130 million now that at least it's being suspect by the current administration for misuse of the funds. But there's so much more, particularly in the health department. So my whole position is we need to operate out of what we are raising on our own and budget and plan according to that, not on potential future federal grants. So we're looking potentially of a good 10%, a 10% issue of the entire budget that could be in jeopardy. We'll either not get the remaining dollars or have to pay back past
10%?
10%, some 150 million.
Mm. Well, the money's got to be made up somewhere then,
well,
right?
It certainly does. And that's County Administrator Lesher has been monitoring it. We get reports on it every meeting, but nonetheless, it's very, very significant, and we're very vulnerable on this whole issue, and we have to be very careful as how we move forward.
All right. Steve Christie.
By the way, Dr. Levy, your next guest?
Yes.
He's a Vail resident.
Yes, he is.
And we're very proud of his efforts as well.
Yeah, coming up, Dr. David Levy, talking about his new book from University of Arizona Press, titled Stargazers. That will be coming up.
I don't know if I've told you this
before. Oh, I think I know what this is about.
But I love being supervisor.
Oh, gosh. Really? We never would have guessed. Steve Christie, Pima County Supervisor. Next, Dr. David Levy. Thank you very much, Steve.
Thanks for having me,
Great to see you.
Thank
we will be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This would be a great weekend to take a road trip over to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. The weather's been really beautiful over there. A little bit chilly at night, but they're having some delightful days and perfect weather. Look at that, 50 degrees. A little bit chilly, but not too bad. Put the Tom on the other side of the glass like he's shivering. No, put the down vest on, get out, do some hiking over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It's only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Start your planning now for an enchanting getaway in the land of enchantment. The website is southwestnewmexico.org. When we do our telephone interviews, which we will be doing here momentarily, that's presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Dr. David Levy is one of the most successful comet discoverers in history. He lives here in very close to Tucson, in Vail, where he has his observatory. David has, he's got 23 comets to his credit, including his co-discovery of Shoemaker-Levy 9, the comet that collided with Jupiter in 1994, producing the most spectacular explosions ever witnessed in the solar system. An Emmy Award winner, Dr. Levy is also author or editor of 36 books and other products. His newest book, just published by the University of Arizona Press, is titled Stargazers. Dr. Levy, how are you?
Well, fine, thank you. It's a pleasure to hear your voice today.
Thank you very much.
I think you're going a lot better in your life, and I'm really glad to hear that.
Things are going very well in my life right now, and very thankful for that, and very filled with gratitude. And I think you're filled with gratitude after you saw the copy, when you had that book in your hand, Stargazers. Yep. You're very pleased, I assume, with the way it all turned out from UA Press.
I am very, very pleased. It has been a wonderful experience to work with the University of Arizona Press and their people and their staff. And I think they did a beautiful job on the book.
Tell us a little bit about the book, David, Stargazers. Is it like an autobiography or what?
No, it's not. It's a collection of articles that I've written for many journals, newspapers, and astronomy club newsletters over the last 20 years. The column is called Skyward. And each month I put in something a little bit different. And I took the best of them over the last 20 years and collected them into this book. And the title Stargazers actually comes from the Wordsworth poem Stargazers. And he's talking about a telescope set up in Leicester Square in London in 1806, and the poet was William Wordsworth. And people are looking through the telescope, they're paying the fee and looking through the telescope, and they are disappointed. And the poem is about why are they disappointed? Is the telescope broken or what? Anyway, I thought that was a delightful piece of poetry, so much so that I put it in my master's thesis. At which time, my thesis advisor penciled a note in the margin saying, Wordsworth wrote some wretched verse. And as I remember his term, wretched verse. And I was just laughing hysterically. And I actually went into his office the next day, still chuckling. And he looked at me and he said, David, I did not mean that to be funny. I was serious. And I thought that was even more funny. And finally, he started to smile, and he started to laugh, too. He says, I think you're right. I think it was pretty funny, wasn't it?
So is this a hint of the David Levy quote of the month?
The quote of the month is actually could have come from Stargazers itself, but instead I wanted to come from Shakespeare, my favorite writer. He wrote a play in about 1599 called Julius Caesar, which some of you might be familiar with. Mm-hmm. In fact, I would expect most of your listeners would be familiar with it. But the night before Caesar gets assassinated, I'm not giving away the plot here too much, but his wife Calpurnia has this nightmare, and the next day she warns him not to go to the Senate that day. And then she says, When beggars die, there are no comets seen. The heavens themselves blaze forth the death of princes. And it just shows that the interest that that man had in the night sky is really pretty special. And it's very special to me.
All right. David, before we let you go, any meteor showers coming up that we should be aware of?
Yes, there is. At the end of this month, on the 21st, there will be a meteor shower from the constellation of Lyra, which means that the meteors will appear to be coming out of Lyra. And it's called the Lyrid meteor shower. And we could get as many as 10 meteors an hour if the sky is clear, no moon. And if there is a moon and if the sky isn't so clear, we'll get fewer. But it's certainly worth to go out to take a look.
All right. All right, Dr. David Levy. David, we will catch up with you the first Thursday in May. Thank you very much.
Okay. I'll be here. Take care. You too. Take care of yourself, Bill.
Thank you very much. Dr. David Levy with us on the Buckmaster Show, reporting from his observatory in Vail, Arizona. Coming up, segment four, with attorney Don Luce. Don is waiting in the wings. The consular is in the house. And we'll take a quick break and be back with Don right after this.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com. Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio. Once a month, we're delighted to bring in our contributor on the law. He knows it pretty darn well, attorney Don Luce of the Luce Law Group, with a beautiful office here in Tucson and in the Catalina foothills. And of course, they have their office in Phoenix as well. Mr. Luce, the Buckmaster Show legal contributor, author of two very popular books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know, both books in their second printing. Don, how are you?
I'm good, Bill. Thank you.
Thanks. Good to have you with us as usual. Okay, we had Proposition 314, and there's some action on this. And refresh our give the listeners an idea. What was Prop 314?
Well, first of all, Prop 314 was a measure that was passed by a wide margin in the November election. So in the November election, there were several propositions on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Some passed, some didn't. But 314 in particular passed by a margin of 63% for to 37% against.
Was this the one commonly referred to as the border initiative?
Exactly.
Border measure? Yes. Okay.
The exact title of this is the Arizona Immigration and Border Law
there
Enforcement Measure.
Okay. So now we have a challenge.
We do. And before we get into that, mm-hmm. it might be interesting to note that before this proposition was even voted upon, mm-hmm. there was a challenge. The pre-vote challenge was that the proposition contained more than one subject. It talked about fentanyl. It talked about arresting people who cross at other than ports of entry, mm-hmm. and so on. And so the challengers said, under the Arizona Constitution, a law can only have one subject. Yeah. And they challenged it on that basis. They lost. Proposition 314 was determined by a judge to be comprised of various things, but they were closely enough related in the judge's opinion to pass constitutional muster. Mm. It got to the ballot, and then, as I mentioned, about 63% of the voters voted in favor of it.
Mm-hmm.
So what does it do? First of all, is it in effect? No, it is not in effect yet. And the reason is there was a clause put into the proposition that basically says it doesn't go into effect until a similar statute in the state of Texas, which is being challenged currently, mm-hmm. Is resolved favorably. So in other words, the Texas statute has to be found constitutional in order for 314 to go into effect. And if the Texas statute is found to be unconstitutional, then 314 will never take effect. But that didn't stop the filing of a lawsuit this week mm-hmm. to challenge 314 on several other grounds. So what will it do if it does ever take effect? It would make it a state crime for non-citizens to enter the state at any location other than the port of entry. It would allow for state and local police to arrest non-citizens who cross the border unlawfully. It would allow state court judges to order deportations and several other things, including making the sale of fentanyl a Class 2 felony if the person knowingly sells it and it results in the death of another person.
Hmm.
So that's what 314 will do if it ever becomes enforceable.
Mm-hmm.
But the way it looks now, there are two hurdles that have to be met before it does become enforced. One is, of course, that the Texas statute, which is very similar to 314 in terms of using state law enforcement mm-hmm. to enforce federal border policy, that statute has to be upheld. That's the first hurdle. And then the second hurdle is that this lawsuit, which was filed this week, challenging the constitutionality of the statute and some other things we'll talk about momentarily, that lawsuit has to be defeated and the court has to find that 314 on its face is not unenforceable.
Mm-hmm.
So the lawsuit that was filed this week basically says if 314 is ever going to take effect, mm-hmm. we want it to be determined to be unenforceable because, number one, there's no funding for it. Mm-hmm. You basically say that local and state police are to do all of these things, mm-hmm. but you don't provide any funding.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these things cost millions and millions and millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. Where's the funding going to come from? Mm-hmm. So in Arizona, the Constitution requires that if you enact basically a new law, you have mm-hmm. to provide funding.
There has
for
to be a
law.
Funding source,
of course.
Right?
Yeah. Of course.
And there is none in this case. So
doesn't seem to be.
Okay.
And the other thing that the challengers are saying is that you can't have a law that basically delegates the question of whether it can be enforced to what happens to a similar statute in another state.
Yeah, I wondered about that. That is a very unusual.
It does seem yeah, odd, doesn't
it's
it?
It's odd. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, this case is at the very beginning. It was just filed. It will take months to get mm-hmm. resolved. But I think it's interesting that Prop 314, which was passed by such a heavy majority, is again finding itself under attack, similar to what it was before the election, but on different grounds this time.
Do we have any idea how the case in Texas is progressing? Do you have any idea over there?
I don't believe there's any hearing that has been set, but I know that it is in the system, and it's probably going to take a while.
It's just, it is odd that you've got something about Arizona with Texas
yes,
as kind of the deciding factor, what happens in Texas.
Well, and let's
stays
not,
in Texas or comes
I,
here.
I don't know about that, but let's not forget that the reason essentially this was on the ballot is because the governor would not have signed off on this. Mm-hmm. And so the legislature, as is its prerogative, put this on the ballot for the voters to approve. The voters overwhelmingly approved it, and maybe someday it'll take effect, maybe not, but that's where we're at with it.
Interesting item at the legislature concerning that could have an impact on jury selection. What's that all about, Don Luce?
All right, backstory on this is that up until 2021, 4 years ago, Arizona used to have what are known as peremptory challenges to jury selection. And what that means simply is that each side was granted a number of challenges to essentially eliminate prospective jurors. So let's say you and I were called for jury duty.
Right.
Okay. That is our duty, by the way, mm-hmm. as citizens. Mm-hmm. So we report for jury duty. And we're sitting in the courtroom with a lot of other prospective jurors, mm-hmm. and the attorneys are questioning us about what we do for a living, who our relatives are, do we have any connection to the case, and a whole host of other questions that they're asking to try to determine our suitability for their particular case. So, for instance, if the case involves, let's say, a malpractice action against a doctor,
mm-hmm.
they're going to want to know probably if anybody on that panel is a healthcare provider
mm-hmm.
or related to a healthcare provider
mm-hmm.
or has ever had any issue with medical care.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Sure.
And if they get affirmative responses to those questions, then maybe one side would determine that, well, we really, you know, don't want that person on the panel.
Maybe they would just not be suitable for that.
Right. Yeah. And so they, prior to 2021, mm-hmm. The attorneys would use a peremptory challenge mm-hmm. to essentially excuse that person from jury duty,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so prior to 2021, each side, each party, the defense and the plaintiff, got four peremptory challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially most courts would publish a list to the attorneys after all the questions were asked of mm-hmm. the panel.
Mm-hmm.
And on the list would be the names in a civil case of approximately 16 people.
Mm-hmm.
And if there were alternates, there would be a couple more likely. But the composition of a civil jury is 8 people. So mm-hmm. the list would be 16, and each side would be able to strike 4 names from that list.
Okay.
Peremptorily.
Right.
No reason needed. Mm-hmm. It couldn't be racial in nature, and mm-hmm. there would have to be a reason other than the person's skin color, but ordinarily, you don't need to give a reason. Mm. You just strike Bill Buckmaster from the list.
Okay.
Bill goes home.
Yeah.
And he served his duty. Mm-hmm. He showed up. Mm-hmm. In 2021, the Arizona Supreme Court said, no, that's not a good way to pick juries.
Mm.
They based it on a study that was done about how the peremptory challenges were being used. And what they found was, I'm sure this will come as a huge surprise, they were being used to try to construct a jury that would be favorable to one side or the other based upon the prospective juror's background, education,
sure.
life experience.
Right.
And so according to the study, which was compiled by the Administrative Office of the Courts, black jurors were underrepresented by 16%, Hispanics 21%, and Native Americans 51%.
Mm.
By contrast, the proportion of white jurors seated varied only 3% from their representation in the population.
Mm.
So the empirical data suggested that the peremptory challenges were actually being used in an improper way to shape the juries so that one side or the other would have the advantage. Because again, if you're suing a doctor for medical malpractice, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of your prospective jurors is a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe one side or the other doesn't want that person to serve on the jury.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if there was a peremptory challenge available, that side could use the peremptory challenge to essentially excuse that potential juror. So now you have a panel that maybe isn't reflective of the general population,
right,
because
right.
it's excluding people with relevant experience, education, or understanding of the issues.
Mm-hmm.
So the Supreme Court said, Arizona Supreme Court said, we're going to eliminate the peremptory challenge. You still have challenges for cause.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody shows up and says, yeah, I can't be fair in this case because yada, 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 the attorneys can still have that person excused, but it's because of the fact that the person's biased or can't be unfair in mm-hmm. the decision making,
mm-hmm.
no longer peremptory. Under this proposal that is coming out of the House Appropriations Committee, Senate Bill 1509, Mark Fincham is trying to reinstate in part the peremptory challenge system, where we would go back to having peremptory challenges for various reasons. So you may have, first of all, it's questionable whether the governor would sign off on this, even mm-hmm. if it passes.
Mm-hmm.
But then you would have a question of the legislature essentially passing a law that was different or at odds with what the Arizona Supreme Court did 4 years ago. And that would be a very interesting test.
Yeah, it sounds like, though, on past performance, a veto may be in the works on that one if it gets to the governor's desk. But who knows?
My money would be on a veto.
Yeah. All right. Attorney Don Luce, thank you very much. Don Luce, always a pleasure to see you. Thank you, Don, for coming in.
My pleasure.
Don from the Luce Law Group offices in Tucson and Phoenix. He's the author of Arizona Laws 101, a handbook for non-lawyers and estate planning in Arizona, what you need to know. On behalf of Attorney Don Luce and Tom on the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster wishing everybody well.